hair, he says.
I don't know why. It just feels better when you do it.
I smile. Do you want me to wash your hair? He shakes his head and turns around to rinse the soap off his face.
I already washed it,
he says matter-of-factly. I can't help but stare at the back of him now. Flawless. I tense up even more, knowing just how not flawless I am. And I don't feel this way because I have a case of low self-esteem, and I'm not pretending to be self-conscious just so he'll compliment me. It's just that I'm a girl who has had a baby, and bodies don't look the same after having babies. My stomach is covered in faint white lines, and the scar from my cesarean is front and center, right above what should be one of the most attractive areas to a man. I won't even talk about what pregnancy does to breasts. I close my eyes just thinking about it.
It's kind of like when someone makes you a sandwich,
Owen says. My eyes flick open. He can see the confusion on my face, and he laughs.
When you wash my hair.
He says it like it's an explanation.
Sandwiches are the same way. I could use the same ingredients and make my sandwich the exact same way as someone else, but for some reason, it just tastes so much better when I'm not the one who makes it. Just like when you wash my hair. It feels better when you do it. It also styles better.
Here I am, almost shaking, I'm so nervous, and he's casually discussing sandwiches and shampoos. He takes a step forward and places his hands on my elbows, turning me until I'm under the water.
I want to wash yours,
he says, grabbing the travel-sized bottle of shampoo that's now half empty. He tilts my head back and runs his hands through my hair as the water saturates it. I'm not like him. I can't keep my eyes open while his hands are in my hair, so I let them fall shut. He lathers my hair, and I'm not sure what feels better, his fingers massaging my scalp, or the part of him that's pressing against my stomach.
Relax,
he says as he begins to rinse my hair. I don't relax. I don't know how. As if he knows this, he moves closer. His closeness actually puts me more at ease. It's when he's several feet away and I'm under the scrutiny of his gaze that I'm the most nervous. He begins to work the conditioner into my hair this time, and he's absolutely right. I've had my hair washed by other people before, a result of being in cosmetology school, and it does feel good, sort of like a massage. But this is more. His hands are so much more. His lips press softly against mine, and he kisses me. His hands move from my hair to my arms, and he pulls them away from my body, wrapping them around his waist until we're flush together. I finally open my eyes and look up into his as he begins to rinse the conditioner out of my hair.
Feels good, doesn't it?
He says with a slightly wicked grin. I smile. I don't ever want to wash my own hair again. He kisses my forehead.
Just wait until you taste my sandwiches.
I laugh, and the tenderness that enters his eyes at the sound of my laughter makes me realize that this is what I want. Selflessness. It should be the basis of every relationship. If a person truly cares about you, they'll get more pleasure from the way they make you feel rather than the way you make them feel.
I want you to know something,
he says, kissing his way down my neck.
And I'm not saying this just to make you feel better.
One of his hands slides up my waist until it meets my breast, and he holds it there.
I'm saying this because I want you to believe it.
He pulls away from my neck to look at me directly.
You are so, so beautiful, Auburn. Everywhere. Every part of you. On the outside. On the inside. When you're beneath me. On top of me. Painted on a canvas.
His eyes are boring into mine, and I close them, because there is way too much truth in this.
So beautiful,
he whispers. He begins to kiss his way down my throat until the warmth of his breath teases my breast. He takes me in his mouth and I moan softly. I bring my hands to the back of his head and keep my eyes closed, hoping we end up in bed before I collapse from dizziness. His hands slide down my waist, down my thighs, until his mouth begins to follow their direction. When his tongue meets my navel, I gasp. Partly because of the sensation, and partly because I want him to stop heading in the direction he's headed. I don't want him near the parts of me I'm most self-conscious about. He repositions himself until he's on his knees in front of me. He's no longer kissing me, and his hands are wrapped around the backs of my thighs. I can feel his breath against my stomach, and the fact that he's not doing anything makes me curious enough to open my eyes and look down at him. He looks up at me. He smiles gently and brings a hand in front of him, trailing his fingers over the scar that marks my abdomen.
"This,"
he says, looking at it,
"is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen on a woman."
The tears sting at my eyes, and I refuse to cry at a time like this, but I think I just officially fell for this man. His lips meet my stomach, and he presses a gentle kiss against my scar. He begins to work his way back up my body until he's standing straight, looking down at me again.
"How many days have we actually seen each other since we met?"
he asks. I want to laugh at his randomness because I think it's my favorite part of him. I shrug. "I don't know. 4? 5?" He slowly shakes his head.
"If you count today, it's 7,
he says, sliding a hand through my hair.
"So tell me, Auburn, how is it possible that I'm already falling in love with you?"
He catches my gasp with his mouth, and he picks me up, carrying me out of the shower and straight to the bed. And this time, I don't get lost in his touch. I don't get lost in his kiss. I don't get lost in how it feels when he pushes himself inside me. I don't feel lost in him at all, because it's the first time I've ever felt like someone truly found me.
"I'll park in the parking garage,"
he says.
"Take my key and go through the back door."
He brings the car to a stop, and I open the door to get out. Before I do, he grabs my arm and pulls me toward him. His lips meet mine, and his kiss feels like a promise.
"I'll be up in a second,"
he says. I rush to the back door of his studio. I insert the key into the lock and shut it just as fast, then hurry up the stairs. Once I'm in his apartment, I can finally breathe a sigh of relief. I don't know why I would think Trey would be waiting out there. It's just disconcerting because he hasn't texted me since last night when I told him I'd talk to him today. He's either giving me the space I need, or he knows I'm up to something. Owen Cat appears at my feet, and I pick her up and carry her into the kitchen with me. I set her on the bar as I reach for a bottle of wine. After the couple of days I've had, I definitely need a drink. I'm sure Owen does too, so I pour him one, just as I hear him walk up behind me. He wraps his arms around me from behind and pulls me against him. I lean my head back against his shoulder and rest my hands on his arms. As soon as I touch him, my eyes flick open and my mouth attempts to form a scream, but I'm cut off by the words whispered into my ear.
"Can't even tell which man has his arms around you?"
Trey's voice stiffens my entire body. His grip around my waist tightens, and that's when I feel the difference. The difference in their height, the difference in their hands, the difference in the way they hold me. "Trey?" I whisper, my voice shaky.
"Save it, Auburn,"
he hisses into my ear. He spins me around and shoves me against the refrigerator, pushing my arms against it.
"Where is he?"
I swallow, relieved that he doesn't know where Owen is. Maybe Owen will hear him and be able to do something to protect himself. I shake my head. I don't know. His eyes seethe with rage, and he tightens his grip on my arms.
"I'm not sure I can handle another lie from you. Where the fuck is he?"
I squeeze my eyes shut and refuse to answer. His mouth meets mine in an abrupt crash, and I attempt to push him off me. He breaks away and backhands me. My legs instantly buckle, but he holds me up when I try to fall. His mouth returns to my ear.
"Call out his name."
I don't. He wraps his hand around the back of my neck and squeezes.
"Call out his name,"
he says again. I open my mouth to tell him to fuck off when I hear Owen's voice.
"Let go of her."
I open my eyes cautiously. The smile on Trey's face when he hears Owen's voice scares me more than what just happened between us. He pulls me to him, spinning me around and presses his chest against my back. We're both facing Owen now. Owen is standing just a few feet away, holding nothing but his cell phone and his car keys. His eyes are frantic as they fall from my head to my toes, assessing me for injuries.
Are you hurt?
I shake my head, but Trey still has a tight grip around me. Owen is solid and still, watching Trey closely.
What do you want, Trey?
A deep chuckle rises from Trey's throat, and he turns his head to mine. He slowly runs his knuckles up my jaw.
You already tainted what I want, Owen.
I can see the rage wash over Owen, and my eyes immediately grow wide with fear. I shake my head, trying to get him to calm down. The last thing he needs is something else to be arrested for. He's on probation, and attacking a cop is probably the one thing Trey is hoping he'll do. Owen, don't. He wants you to hit him. Don't do it. Trey presses his cheek to mine, and I watch as Owen's eyes follow the path of Trey's hand. He trails it down my throat, between my breasts and over my stomach. By the time his hand settles between my legs, I can taste the bile in my throat. I squeeze my eyes shut, because the look in Owen's eyes proves there's no way he's going to stand there and allow Trey to do this. I hear him lunge forward right before I'm tossed aside. I fall to the floor, and by the time I turn around, Owen has already punched Trey. Trey is grabbing the counter for support with one hand and reaching for his gun with the other. Owen is standing in front of me now, facing me, making sure I'm okay. My words don't come out, but I want to tell him to turn around, to run, to duck, but nothing will come out. Owen takes my face between his hands and says,
"Auburn, go downstairs and call the police."
Trey laughs, and Owen can see the onset of a new kind of fear in my eyes. He turns around and blocks me with his body, pushing me further away from Trey.
"Call the police?"
Trey says, continuing with the laughter.
"And who will they believe? The addict and the whore who got pregnant at 15? Or the cop?"
Neither Owen nor I speak, as we both allow the words that just fell from Trey's mouth to sink in.
"Oh, and let's not forget the contraband you have hidden all over your studio. There's also that."
I can feel every muscle in Owen's body tense. Trey set him up. He broke into his studio not to steal stuff, but to leave stuff. I fist my hands in the back of Owen's shirt, fearing the worst.
"What do you want, Trey?"
Owen asks. His voice sounds defeated. He's reached his breaking point with Trey, and that's not a good thing.
"I just want you out of the fucking picture,"
Trey says.
"You've been a pain in my ass since the day we met, and you just continue to resurface."
He takes several steps closer, and Owen pushes me further back, still shielding me with his body.
"Auburn needs to be a mother to that boy, and he needs me to be his father. As long as you're brainwashing her, that'll never happen."
Trey looks over Owen's shoulder, directly at me.
"You'll thank me for this one day, Auburn."
Trey lifts the radio to his mouth.
"En route to Precinct 6,
Trey says.
"Subject in custody for assault on an officer."
"What?" I yell. "Trey, you can't do this. He's on probation." Trey ignores me and begins spouting off an address into the radio. Owen turns to face me.
"Auburn."
His eyes are serious, focused.
"Tell them whatever he wants you to say. If he's telling the truth and he really did plant stuff in my studio, I'll go to jail for a long time. Let them arrest me for assault. It'll be a much lesser charge. I'll talk to my father in the morning and we'll figure out where to go from there."
I refuse to agree with what he's saying. He hasn't done anything wrong. If I just tell them the truth, you won't be in trouble, Owen. He closes his eyes and exhales, practicing patience in a situation that warrants none. When he opens his eyes again, they're somehow even more focused.
"He's angry. Trey knows what happened between us, and he wants his payback. And he's right. They'll never believe us over him. Not with my history."
My eyes begin to burn, and I try to remain as calm as he is right now, but it isn't working, especially now that Trey is pulling him away from me. Owen puts his hands behind his back, and Trey places the cuffs on them. Owen doesn't even resist, and I'm crying too hard to try to stop it. I follow them down the stairs, across the studio, and out the front door to Trey's police car. He shoves Owen in the back seat and then turns to face me. He opens the front passenger door.
Get in, Auburn. I'll give you a ride home.
I get in, but only because there is no way in hell I'm allowing Owen to spend another day in jail that he doesn't deserve.
Chapter 22. Owen. I'm quiet. So is she. I know that neither of us is speaking right now because we're trying to figure out a way to get out of this. There has to be a way for her to get her son and not have to go through Trey to do it. And there has to be a way for me to get out of the situation Trey has just put me in without it affecting Auburn and her relationship with AJ. I watch from the back seat as she turns her attention to Trey. What do you think is going to happen now? She asks him. You think I'm just going to forget the fact that you attacked me? That you destroyed Owen's studio? That you're framing him? Don't, Auburn. Don't make him even angrier. He turns to face her, and she doesn't back down, even through his silence. I'll never love you like I loved Adam. As soon as the words come out of her mouth, he jerks the car over to the side of the road. He lunges forward across the seat and squeezes her jaw, bringing his face inches from hers. I'm not Adam. I'm Trey. And I suggest if you want to continue being the half-assed mother you are to my nephew, you'll say whatever the fuck I tell you to say. A tear slides down her cheek. My fists are clenched, and I want to beat on the barrier in order to get him to release her, but I can't. My hands are cuffed behind my back, and I can't do a goddamn thing from this back seat to stop him. I bring my feet up and start kicking his seat. Get your hands off her! Trey doesn't move. He continues to hold on to her jaw until she gives in and nods. He releases her and slides back to his side of the seat. She glances at me from her position in the passenger seat, and I've never felt more helpless. I see the roll of her throat as she swallows. She pulls her knees up to her chest, and her tears begin to fall even harder. Her head rests against the back of the seat, while her back is pressed against the passenger door. I can see just how much pain she's in, how scared she is. I scoot closer to her and press my forehead against the glass, trying to get as close to her as I can. I look at her reassuringly, wanting her to know that whatever happens, we're in this together. She keeps her eyes locked with mine until we pull into the police station. Trey kills the ignition. This is what happened. You called me to pick you up at his apartment because the two of you got into a fight, Trey says. And when I arrived, he attacked me. That's when I arrested him. Got it? He reaches across the seat and takes her hand. Owen needs to be behind bars where he belongs, and if I don't make sure that happens, I'll never forgive myself if you or AJ are hurt. He's the only reason I'm doing this, Auburn. You want your son to be safe, right? She nods, but there's something in her eyes. Something I know isn't consent, and that scares me. I don't want her to go in there and defend me. Do what he says, Auburn. My door swings open, and I'm pulled out of the car. Right before I look away from her, she makes a fist and holds it against her chest.
Chapter 23. Auburn. I didn't do what Trey asked me to do. In fact, I didn't do anything. I didn't say anything. I didn't answer a single question. Every question that was fired at me, I pressed my lips together tighter and tighter. Owen may not want me to tell them the truth, but if Trey thinks for a second that I'm going to lie for him, he's more delusional than I even imagined. When they told me I was free to leave, Trey said he would drive me home. I told him no thank you, and I walked right past him. I'm now standing outside of the police station, waiting for the cab I just called to arrive. Trey walks up beside me and stands next to me. His mere presence causes me to rub my hands up my arms to wipe away the chills.
I'll give you a couple of days to cool off, he says. But then I'm coming over. We need to talk about this.
I don't respond to him. I don't know how he thinks I would ever be willing to forgive him after tonight.
I know you're upset, but you have to see things from my perspective. Owen has a criminal record. I don't know what kind of hold he has over you, but you can't blame me for thinking about the safety of your son, Auburn. You can't be upset that I'm trying to do what's best by getting him out of your life so that you can focus on AJ.
It takes everything in me not to respond. I continue to stare straight ahead until he sighs heavily and makes his way back inside the police station. When the cab pulls up, I climb inside. The driver asks for the address just as I'm pulling my phone out of my pocket. I type Callahan Gentry home address into the search engine, and I wait for the results to return. I don't know what I expected to find when I appeared at Callahan Gentry's front door last night, but the man who stood in front of me certainly wasn't it. He looked so much like Owen. His eyes were kind like Owen's, but they looked tired. That very well could have been because it was the middle of the night, but I felt like it was something more than that. It reminded me of when Owen said he watched the life seep out of his father's eyes, and I truly understood what he meant when I saw it firsthand.
"Can I help you?"
his father said. I shook my head. "No, but you can help your son." At first, he appeared somewhat defensive after my comment, but then it was as if something clicked, and he said,
"You're the girl he talked about, the one who has the same middle name?"
I nodded, and he invited me inside his home. When I sat on the couch across from him and began to tell him what had transpired, I grew more and more nervous, thinking my plan might not work out. But the second he agreed to help me, I instantly relaxed. I knew I couldn't fight this alone. My hands are shaking right now, despite the fact that Owen's father is sitting right next to me. I don't think anything could calm me down in this moment, because if it doesn't work out in my and Owen's favor, I'll have just made things a whole lot worse. My heart is in my throat as we wait for her to arrive. I've been awake for more than 24 hours now, but adrenaline is pumping through me, keeping me alert. I wasn't even sure if his phone call would convince her to show up today, but his secretary just buzzed through the speaker to let him know she's here. In a matter of seconds, I'll be face to face with Lydia. I expect she'll be angry. I expect she'll argue. What I don't expect to see when she finally walks through the door is the man standing behind her. When Trey's eyes meet mine, I can see the curiosity cloud his face. There isn't any curiosity on Lydia's face, just a world of annoyance when she witnesses me sitting here. She gives her head a shake as she pauses across the boardroom table from us.
"This was the emergency?"
she asks, waving her hand in my direction. She gives a huge roll of her eyes, and she turns and looks at Trey.
"I'm sorry I dragged you into this," she says to him. "I didn't realize it had to do with Auburn."
Trey's expression is tight, and he glances from me to Owen's father.
"What is this about?"
he says. Owen's father, who insisted I call him Cal the second he found out how I knew Owen, stands and motions for them to take two seats across from us. Trey chooses to remain standing, but Lydia sits directly in front of me. I can see her glance at the cut on my lip, but she doesn't ask about it. She darts her eyes to Cal as she folds her arms over the table.
"I have to leave in half an hour to pick up my grandson from preschool. Why am I here?"
Cal shifts his eyes to mine briefly. I warned him about her, but I think he may have thought I was exaggerating. He straightens out the papers that are in front of him, and then he leans back against his chair.
"These are custody papers,"
he says, pointing to the papers laid out in front of him.
"Auburn is requesting custody of her son."
Lydia laughs. She literally laughs and looks at me like I've lost my mind. She begins to stand up.
"Well, that was fast,"
she says.
"I think we're done here."
I hate that she so easily dismisses the notion. She turns to walk out the door, and I look at Trey, who is still eyeing me. He knows I'm up to something, and my confidence is scaring him. "Trey," I say to him, just as Lydia reaches the door, "tell your mother we aren't finished yet." Trey's jaw grows tight, and his eyes narrow in my direction. He says nothing to Lydia, but he doesn't have to. Lydia turns and faces me, and then moves her focus to Trey. Trey won't look at her because he's too busy trying to threaten me with his glare, so she looks back at me.
"What's going on, Auburn? Why are you doing this?"
I choose not to respond to her. Instead, I place my phone on the table. I open up the file and I press play. You think I'm just going to forget the fact that you attacked me? That you destroyed Owen's studio? That you're framing him? I pause the recording and watch as all the color drains from Trey's face. I can almost hear his thoughts. They're written so clearly across his face. He's trying to think back on last night and what he might have said to Owen or me on the way to the police station. Because he knows whatever was spoken inside that vehicle, I now have it on my phone as evidence. He doesn't move a muscle, other than tensing his arms and shoulders. Should I play the rest of our conversation from last night, Trey? He closes his eyes and looks down at the floor. He lifts his leg and kicks the chair in front of him. "Fuck!" he yells. Lydia flinches. She's looking back and forth between Trey and me, but he doesn't look at anything other than the floor. He's pacing back and forth. He knows his entire career is in my hands now. And the fact that Lydia is sitting down again proves that she realizes it too. She's staring at my phone with a look of defeat, and as much as I want to say her expression pleases me, it doesn't. I never wanted it to come to this. "I'll stay in Dallas," I tell her. "I won't move back to Portland. You can still see him. As long as you aren't living in the same house as Trey, I'll even give you weekend visitation. But he's my son, Lydia. He needs to be with me. And if I have to use your son against you in order to get my son back, then so help me God, I will." Cal pushes the paperwork toward her. I lean forward across the table, and for the first time in my life, I'm not scared of the woman sitting across from me. "If you sign the custody papers and Trey drops the charges against Owen, I won't forward the email that contains this conversation to every single officer in Trey's precinct." Before Lydia picks up the pen, she turns and looks at Trey.
"If that happens, and someone gets hold of whatever she has on that recording, will it affect your career? Is she telling the truth, Trey?"
Trey pauses his frantic pacing, and he looks directly at me. He nods a slow nod, but can't even verbalize a response to her. Lydia's eyes close, and she exhales. The choice is in her hands. Either she can allow me to be a mother to my son, or I'll make sure her son pays for what he's done to Owen, for what he almost did to me.
"You realize this is blackmail,"
Trey says. I look up at him and nod calmly. I learned from the best. The room grows quiet, and I can almost hear him trying to come up with a way out of this. When Trey doesn't offer up an alternative, and Lydia realizes they have no choice, she picks up the pen. She signs each form and then pushes them across the table toward me. I try to remain calm, but my hands are shaking as I hand the paperwork to Cal. Lydia stands up and walks to the door. Before she exits the room, she looks back at me. I can tell she's on the verge of tears, but her tears are nothing compared to the tears I've shed because of her.
"I'll pick him up from preschool on my way home. You can stop by in a few hours. It'll give me time to get some of his things together."
I nod, unable to speak due to the sob I'm keeping lodged in my throat. As soon as the door closes behind Lydia and Trey, I burst into tears. Cal puts an arm around me and pulls me to him.
"Thank you," I say. "Oh my God, thank you so much."
I feel him shake his head.
"No, Auburn. I'm the one who should be thanking you."
He doesn't elaborate on why he's thanking me, but I can't help but hope that somehow, seeing the sacrifices his son has made for both of us, will give him the strength to do what he needs to do.
Chapter 24. Owen. When I walk into the room and see my father's face rather than Auburn's, my heart sinks. I haven't seen or spoken to her in over 24 hours. I have no idea what's transpired or if she's even okay. I take a seat in front of my father, not even concerned with whatever it is he wants to discuss with me. "Do you know where Auburn is? Is she okay?" He nods. "She's fine," he says, and those words instantly put me at ease. "All the charges against you have been dropped. You're free to leave." I don't move, because I'm not sure I understood him correctly. The door opens and someone enters the room. The officer motions for me to stand, and when I do, he removes the cuffs from my wrists. Do you have any belongings you need to retrieve before you leave? My wallet, I say, as I massage my wrists. When you're finished in here, let me know and I'll sign you out. I look at my father again, and he can see the shock still registered on my face. He actually smiles. She's something else, isn't she? I smile in return, because how did you do it, Auburn? The light is back in my father's eyes, the light I haven't seen since the night of our wreck. I don't know how, but I know she had something to do with this. She's like a light, unwittingly brightening up the darkest corners of a man's soul. I have so many questions, but I save them until after I sign out and we're outside. How? I blurt out before the door closes behind us. Where is she? Why did he drop the charges? My father smiles again, and I didn't realize how much I missed that. I've missed his smile almost as much as I miss my mother's. He hails a cab as it rounds the corner. When it stops, he opens the door and tells the cab driver her address. He takes a step back. I think you should ask Auburn these questions. I eye him cautiously, debating whether to get in the cab and head to Auburn or check him for fever. He pulls me in for a hug and doesn't let go. I'm sorry, Owen, for so many things, he says. His hold around me tightens, and I can feel the apology in his embrace. When he pulls back, he ruffles my hair like I'm a child. Like I'm his son. Like he's my dad. I won't be seeing you for a few months, he says. I'm going away for a while. I hear something in his voice that I've never heard before. Strength. If I were to paint him right now, I would paint him the exact same shade of green as Auburn's eyes. He takes several steps back and watches me get inside the cab. I stare at him from the window and I smile. Callahan Gentry and his son are going to be okay. Saying goodbye to him was almost as hard as this moment. Standing in front of her apartment door, preparing to say hello to her. I lift my hand and knock on her door. Footsteps. I inhale a calming breath and wait for the door to open. It feels like these last 2 minutes have taken two whole lifetimes. I wipe my palms down my jeans. When the door finally opens, my eyes fall to the person standing in front of me. He's the last person I expected to see here. Seeing him in the doorway to Auburn's apartment, smiling up at me, is definitely a moment I'm going to paint someday. I don't know how you did it, Auburn. Hey, AJ says, grinning widely. I remember you. I smile back at him. Hey, AJ, I reply. Is your mom home? AJ glances over his shoulder and opens the door wider. Before he invites me in, he crooks his finger and asks me to bend down. When I do, he grins and whispers, My muscles are really big now. I didn't tell anybody about our tent. He cups his hands around his mouth. And it's still here. I laugh, just as he spins around at the sound of her footsteps approaching. Sweetie, don't ever open the front door without me, I hear her say to him. He pushes the door open wider, and her eyes lock with mine. Her footsteps come to an immediate halt. I didn't think seeing her would hurt this much. Every part of me hurts. My arms ache to hold her. My mouth aches to touch hers. My heart aches to love hers. AJ, go to the bedroom and feed your new fish. Her voice is firm and unwavering. She still hasn't smiled. I already fed him, AJ says to her. Her eyes leave mine and she looks down at him. You can feed him 2 more pellets as a snack, okay? She points in the direction of her bedroom. He must know that look, because he immediately retreats toward the bedroom. As soon as AJ disappears, I take a quick step back, because she's running at me. She jumps into my arms so hard and fast, I'm forced to take several more steps back and hit the wall behind me so that we don't fall. Her arms are locked around my neck, and she's kissing, kissing, kissing me like I've never been kissed before. I can taste her tears and laughter, and it's an incredible combination. I'm not sure how long we stand in the hallway kissing, because seconds aren't long enough when they're spent with her. Her feet eventually meet the floor, and her arms lock around my waist, and her face presses against my chest. I wrap my hand around the back of her head and hold her like I plan on holding her every day after today. She's crying, not because she's sad, but because she doesn't know how to express what she's feeling. She knows there aren't words good enough for this moment. So neither of us speaks, because there aren't any words good enough for me either. I press my cheek to the top of her head and stare inside her apartment. I look up at the painting on her living room wall. I smile, remembering the first night I walked into her apartment and saw it for the first time. I knew she had to have the painting in her possession somewhere, but actually seeing it displayed in her living room was an incredible feeling. It was surreal, and I wanted to turn to her that night and tell her all about it. I wanted to tell her my connection to it. I wanted to tell her my connection to her. But I didn't, and I never will, because this confession isn't mine to share. This confession belonged to Adam. 5 years earlier, Owen. I'm sitting on the floor of the hallway next to my father's hospital room. I watch as she exits the room next door. "You're just throwing them away?" she asks in disbelief. Her words are directed at the woman she just trailed into the hallway. I know the woman's name is Lydia, but I still don't know the name of the girl. Not for lack of trying, though. Lydia turns around, and I see that she's holding a box in her arms. She looks down at the contents of it, and then back at the girl. "He hasn't painted in weeks. He doesn't have any use for them anymore, and they're just taking up room." Lydia turns around and sets the box down on the nurse's desk. "Can you find somewhere to discard these?" she says to the nurse on duty. Before the nurse even agrees, Lydia walks back into the room and returns a few seconds later with several blank canvases. She sets them on the desk next to the box of what I now assume are painting supplies. The girl stares down at the box even after Lydia returns to the hospital room. She looks sad, almost as if saying goodbye to his things is as difficult as saying goodbye to him. I watch her for several minutes as her emotions begin to trickle out of her in the form of tears. She wipes them away and looks up at the nurse. "Do you have to throw them away? Can't you at least give them to someone?" The nurse hears the sadness in her words. She smiles warmly and nods. The girl nods back and then turns and slowly makes her way back into the hospital room. I don't know her, but I would probably have the same reaction if someone were to throw something away of my father's. I've never attempted to paint before, but I do draw occasionally. I find myself standing up, walking toward the nurse's station. I look down at the box full of various types of paints and brushes. "Can I..." The sentence doesn't even finish leaving my mouth when the nurse shoves the box at me. "Please," she says, "take it. I don't know what to do with it." I grab the supplies and walk them into my father's room. I lay them down on the only available area of counter space. The rest of his hospital room is full of flowers and plants that have been delivered over the last couple of weeks. I should probably do something with them, but I still have hope that he'll wake up soon and see them all. After finding room for the art supplies, I walk to the chair next to my father's bed and take a seat. I watch him. I watch him for hours, until I get so bored that I stand up and try to find something else to stare at. Sometimes I stare at the blank canvas on the desk. I don't even know where to start. So I spend the entire next day dividing my attention between my father, the canvas, and the occasional walks I take around the hospital. I don't know how many more days of this I can take. It's as if I can't even properly grieve until I know he's able to grieve with me. I hate that as soon as he wakes up, if he wakes up, I'll more than likely have to go over every last detail of that night with him, when all I want to do is forget it. "Never look at your phone, Owen," he said. "Watch the road," my brother said from the back seat. "Use your blinker, hands at 10 and 2, keep the radio off." I was completely new at driving, and every single direction that came out of their mouths reminded me of that. all but the one direction I wished they had given me the most. Watch out for drunk drivers. We were hit from the passenger side, right when the light turned green, and I made it out into the intersection. The wreck wasn't my fault, but had I been more experienced, I would have known to look left and right first, even though the light gave me permission to move forward. My brother and mother died on impact. My father remains in critical condition. I've been broken since the moment it happened. I spend the majority of my days and nights here, and the longer I sit, waiting for him to wake up, the lonelier it becomes. The visits from family and friends have stopped. I haven't been to school in weeks, but that's the least of my concerns. I just wait. Wait for him to move. Wait for him to blink. Wait for him to speak. Usually by the end of every day, I'm so exhausted from everything that's not happening, I have to take a breather. For the first week or two, the evenings were the hardest part for me, mostly because it meant another day where he showed no signs of improvement was coming to an end. But lately, the evenings have grown into something I actually look forward to. And I have her to thank for that. It might be her laugh, but I also think it's the way she loves whomever it is she visits that makes me feel hopeful. She comes and visits him every evening from 5 to 7. Adam, I think, is his name. I notice that when she visits, his other family members leave the room. I assume Adam prefers it that way so he can get his alone time with her. I feel guilty sometimes, sitting out here in the hallway, propped up against the wall between his door and my father's door. But there's nowhere else I can go and feel the same way I do when I hear her voice. His visits with her are the only time I ever hear him laugh, or talk much, for that matter. I've heard enough conversations come from his room over the past few weeks to know what his fate is, so the fact that he's able to laugh when he's with her speaks volumes. I think his imminent death is also what gives me a little bit of hope. I know that sounds morbid, but I assume Adam and I are around the same age, so I put myself in his shoes a lot when I start to feel sorry for myself. Would I rather be on my deathbed with a prognosis of only a few weeks to live, or would I rather be in the predicament I'm in? Sometimes, on the really bad days, when I think about how I'll never see my brother again, I think I'd rather be in Adam's shoes. But then there are moments when I hear how she speaks to him, and the words she says to him, and I think I'm lucky I'm not in his shoes, because I still have a chance of being loved like that someday. And I feel bad for Adam, knowing the kind of love she has for him, and knowing that's what he's leaving behind. That has to be hard for him. But that also means he was lucky enough to find her before his time was up. That has to make death a little more bearable, even if only by a fraction. I return to the hallway and slide down to the floor, waiting for her to laugh tonight, but it doesn't come. I scoot closer to his door and further away from my father's, wondering why tonight is different, why tonight isn't one of the happier visits. But I guess I'm also referring to our parents for not understanding this, I hear Adam say to her, for not allowing me to have the one and only thing I want here with me. As soon as I realize that this is their goodbye, my heart breaks for her, and it breaks for Adam, even though I don't know either of them. I listen for a few more minutes until I hear him say, tell me something about yourself that no one else knows, something I can keep for myself. I feel like these confessions should stay between the two of them. I feel like if I were ever to hear one of them, Adam wouldn't be able to keep it for himself, because I would have it too. Which is why I always stand up and walk away at these moments, even though I want to know her secrets more than I want to know anything else in the world. I walk to the waiting area next to the elevators and take a seat. As soon as I sit down, the elevator doors open and Adam's brother walks in. I know it's his brother, and I know his name is Trey. I also know, simply based on the brief visits he makes with his brother, that I don't like him. I've seen him pass her in the hall a couple of times, and I don't like the way he turns around and watches her walk away. He's looking down at his watch, walking in a hurry toward the room she and Adam are saying their goodbyes to each other in. I don't want him to hear their confessions, and I don't want him to interrupt their goodbye, so I catch myself following after him, asking him to stop. He rounds the corner to the hallway before he realizes I'm actually speaking to him. He turns around and eyes me up and down, sizing me up. "Give them a few more minutes," I say to him. I can tell by the change in his eyes that I pissed him off when I said this. I didn't mean to, but it seems like he's the type of guy to get pissed off by almost anything. "Who the hell are you?" I immediately dislike him. I also don't like that he looks so angry, because he's obviously older than me, and bigger than me, and much, much meaner than me. "Owen Gentry, I'm a friend of your brother's," I say, lying to him. I point down the hallway toward the room she and Adam are in. "He needs a few more minutes with her." Trey doesn't seem to give a shit how many minutes Adam needs with her. "Well, Owen Gentry, she's got a plane to catch," he says, agitated that I'm wasting his time. He continues down the hallway and walks into the room. I can hear her sobs now. It's the first time I've ever heard her sob, and I can't bear to hear it. I turn and walk back to the waiting area, feeling her and Adam's pain in my own chest. The next thing I hear are her pleas for more time and her "I love yous" as Trey is pulling her down the hallway by her arm. I've never wanted to hurt someone so badly in my entire life. "Stop," Trey says to her, agitated that she's still trying to get back to Adam's room. He wraps his arm around her waist this time and pulls her to him so she can't get away. "I'm sorry, but we have to go." She allows him to hold her, and I know it's only because she's so broken right now. But the way his hands move down her back forces me to grip the arms of the chair I'm in so that I don't physically pry him off of her. Her back is to me, which means he's facing me now that he has his arms wrapped around her. The smallest smirk plays across his mouth when he notices the anger on my face, and then he winks at me. The bastard just winked at me. When the doors finally open and he releases her, she glances back toward Adam's room. I can see her hesitation as Trey waits for her to step into the elevator first. She takes a step back, wanting to return to Adam. She's scared because she knows she'll never see him again if she steps into that elevator. She looks at Trey and says, "Please, just let me say goodbye, one last time." She's whispering because she knows if she tries to speak louder, her voice won't work. Trey shakes his head and says, "You already said goodbye. We have to go." He has no heart. He holds the doors for her to step on, and she considers it. But then, in the next second, she begins to take off in a sprint in the other direction. My heart smiles for her, because I want her to be able to say goodbye to him again. I know that's what Adam would want, too. I know how much it would mean to him just to see her run back into his room one last time and give him one last kiss and allow him to say, "I'll love you forever, even when I can't," just one last time. I can see in Trey's eyes that he has every intention of stopping her. He turns to run after her, to pull her back, but I'm suddenly in front of him, blocking him. He shoves me, and I punch him, which I know isn't the right thing to do, but I do it anyway, knowing I'm about to get hit in return. But one punch is worth it, because it'll give her enough time to get back to Adam's room and tell him goodbye again. As soon as his huge fist meets my jaw, I meet the floor. God damn it, that hurt. He steps over me to run after her. I grab his ankle and pull, watching as he falls to the ground. A nurse hears the commotion and comes running around the corner just as he kicks me in the shoulder and tells me to fuck off. He's on his feet again and running down the hall, and I'm standing now. I'm almost back to my father's room when I hear her say to Adam, "I'll love you forever, even when I shouldn't." It makes me smile, even though my mouth hurts and is covered in blood. I walk into my father's room and go straight to the counter where the painting supplies are stacked up. I grab an empty canvas and rummage through the box, inspecting all the other supplies. Who would have thought that my first fight over a girl would be for a girl who isn't even mine? I can hear her still crying as she's pulled down the hallway again for what I know really is the last time. I sit down in the chair and stare at the box full of his art supplies. I begin to pull them out one by one. It was 8 hours later, and almost daylight, when I finally finished the painting. I set it aside to dry and fell asleep until dark. I know she won't be in his room tonight, and that makes me sad for both of them, and even a little selfishly sad for myself. I stand at his door for a little while, waiting to knock, wanting to ensure his brother isn't in the room. After several minutes of quiet, I knock softly on the door. "Come in," he says, although his voice is so weak tonight, I have to strain to hear it. I open the door and take a few steps into the room. When he sees me and fails to recognize me, he attempts to sit up several inches. It looks hard for him. God, he's so young. I mean, I know he's about the same age as me, but death makes him look younger than he should. Death should only be acquainted with the old. "Hey," I say, as I slowly make my way into his room. "Sorry to bother you, but..." I glance back at the door and then to him again. "This is weird, so I'm just going to say it. I made you something." I'm holding the canvas in my hand, afraid to turn it around so that he can see it. His eyes fall to the back of it, and he inhales a breath and attempts to push himself further up on the bed. "What is it?" I walk closer to him and point to the chair, asking for permission to sit. Adam nods his head. I don't show him the painting right away. I feel like I should explain it first, or explain me, or, at the very least, introduce myself. "I'm Owen," I tell him after I take a seat in the chair. I motion to the wall behind his head. "My father has been in the room next door for a few weeks." Adam regards me for a moment, and then he says, "What's wrong with him?" "He's in a coma. Car accident." His eyes become genuinely sympathetic, and it makes me like him almost immediately. It also lets me know that he's nothing like his brother. "I was driving," I add. I don't know why I clarify that to him. Maybe to show him that even though I'm not the one dying, my life isn't so much to envy. "Your mouth," he says, making a weak effort to point at the bruise that has formed since my scuffle in the hallway last night. "Were you the one who got into a fight with my brother?" I'm taken aback for a moment, shocked that he knows about it. I nod. He laughs a little. "The nurse told me about that. Said you tackled him in the hall when he was trying to stop Auburn from telling me goodbye again." I smile. Auburn, I think to myself. I've been wondering for 3 weeks what her name is. Of course it would be Auburn. I've never heard of anyone else with that name. It suits her perfectly. "Thank you for that," Adam says. His words come out in a pained whisper. I hate that I'm forcing him to talk so much when I know it hurts him. I hold up the painting a little higher and look down at it. "Last night, after she left," I say, "I guess you could say I was inspired to paint this for you. Or maybe it's for her. Both of you, I guess." I immediately look up at him. "I hope that's not weird." He shrugs. "Depends on what it is." I stand and walk the painting to him, turning it around so that he can see it. He doesn't have any type of reaction to it at first. He just stares at it. I let him hold it, and I back away, a little embarrassed that I thought he would want something like this. "It's my first attempt at painting," I say, excusing the fact that he probably thinks it's horrendous. His eyes immediately meet mine, and the expression on his face is anything but indifference. He points to it. "This is your first attempt?" he says in disbelief. "Seriously?" I nod. "Yeah, probably my last, too." He immediately shakes his head. "I hope not," he says. "This is incredible." He reaches to the remote and presses the button to lift the head of the bed a few more inches. He points to a table next to the chair. "Grab that pin." I don't question him. I hand him the pin and watch as he flips the painting over and writes something on the back of the canvas. He reaches to the nightstand beside his bed and tears off a sheet of paper from a notepad. He writes something down on the notepad and hands me both the painting and the piece of paper. "Do me a favor," he says, as I take both of them out of his hands. "Will you mail this to her? From me?" He points to the slip of paper in my hands. Her address is at the top, and the return address is at the bottom. I look down at the slip of paper in my hands, and I read her full name. Auburn Mason Reed, I say out loud. What are the chances? I smile and run my thumb over the letters in her middle name. We have the same middle name. I look back up at Adam, and he's lowering his head again with a faint smile on his face. That could be fate, you know. I shake my head, dismissing his comment. I'm pretty sure she's your fate, not mine. His voice is strained, and it takes a tremendous amount of effort for him to roll onto his side. He closes his eyes and says, Hopefully she has more than one fate, Owen. He doesn't open his eyes again. He falls asleep, or maybe just needs a break from speaking. I look down at her name again and think about the words he just spoke. Hopefully she has more than one fate. It makes me feel good to know that as much as he loves her, he also knows she'll move on after his death, and he accepts that. It even seems like he wants that for her. Unfortunately, if this really were fate, we would have been placed together under different circumstances and with way better timing. I look up at him again, and his eyes are still closed. He pulls the covers over his arms, so I quietly back out of the room, painting in hand. I'll mail this painting to her, because he asked me to, and then I'm going to throw away her address. I'll try to forget her name, even though I know I never will. Who knows? If we're meant to be together and fate really does exist, maybe one of these days she'll wind up at my door. Maybe Adam will, in some way, be the one to make that happen. Until that day comes, though, I'm pretty sure I have something to keep me occupied. I think with the inadvertent help of her and Adam, I may have just discovered my calling. I look down at the painting in my hands, and I flip it over. I read the last words Adam will ever write to her. I'll love you forever, even when I can't. When I turn the painting around to face me again, I run my fingers over it. I touch the space between the two hands, and I think about everything between the two of them that is pulling them apart. And I hope, for her sake, that Adam is right. I hope she does have a second fate, because she deserves it.
Confess was written by Colleen Hoover and read by Elizabeth Louise and Sebastian York. Editing and post-production by Common Mode. Paul Fowley, technical director. The associate producer was Louisa Solomon. The mix engineer was Mike Decino. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Confess is available in print from Atria Books. Also by Colleen Hoover from Simon & Schuster Audio, Maybe Not, read by Elizabeth Louise and Jason Carpenter, and Ugly Love, read by Grace Grant and Deacon Lee, with Elizabeth Louise.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.